Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Which Tony Blair will you vote for, David or Ed?
Answer me this, answer me this.
Is Nick Clegg feeling anything except utter dread?
Answer me this, Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
Now, last time we were talking about the announcements on tube trains to guide the visually impaired.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Please alight here for Answer Me This 311 revision.
Exactly. Sarah says, in Answer Me This 311, you were mentioning how Moorfields Eye Hospital is announced at Old Street Tube Station. And Helen was right, there are 8 exits from the underground. We were saying, yes, it'd be very hard. What's the point of telling a blind person come off here if they then walk straight into a wall?
It's a very complex underground station with a terrifying road system at ground level.
But she clarifies for us.
Ooh.
There is a large, about a foot wide, green line that runs from inside the underground station to the main entrance of Moorfields. All a visually impaired person needs to do is follow the line to get into the hospital.
And to know that that line is there in the first place.
Well, you can't account for stupid people who haven't done the research, Helen. The line is also raised about a centimetre, so it's easy to follow even without using vision at all.
Very good. They've thought of everything. But...
oh, sting in the tail.
Mark also wrote to say, there is the green line. However, on my very first unaided trip to Moorfields, suitably armed with the information about the green line, and as a seriously blind person, I duly located the line and diligently followed it into the abyss that I'd hoped and trusted was the correct route.
Oh dear.
Unfortunately, around halfway there, I encountered a building renovation scheme to one of the buildings on Old Street, and the scaffolding had been positioned right in the middle of the green line! Ah!
That's really cunty, isn't it?
It's equal opportunities, though, isn't it? Because Old Street's a nightmare for everyone. Why make it particularly easier for visually impaired people? They're just giving them the experience of everyone else of being baffled when they get there and not being able to find their way around.
Yay!
Let me out to civilization is what everyone thinks, blind or not.
I really hope that Mark found Moorfields, but the fact that his email ends with ARG makes me think that might be the last anyone heard of Mark. Well, also on the subject of Answer Me This, episode 311, Ross has written in regarding the debate as to whether Night Nurse the Medicine or Night Nurse the Song was first. He says, a quick look at the United Kingdom trademark listings provides the answer.
Well, it might for you, Ross, but I'm not used to the UK trademark listings website.
What do you mean you're not used to it? Well, how much time have you spent getting to know
it? I spent half an hour trying to find this answer last time.
Maybe if the UK trademark listings are so good at answering questions, I should get them to co-host the show with me.
Well, anyway, what's the answer?
Ross says Night Nurse the Medicine was trademarked in 1972, whilst an earlier serum was registered in 1934.
Okay, well, as I predicted, it wasn't after the song. So I did answer it correctly. I just didn't know that. I didn't know that. So thank you for telling me.
But you were incorrect in your supposition that they had not used the song Night Nurse to advertise the medicine Night Nurse.
Yeah.
Because Michael says there was a 2002 advert. And
well,
the proof is on YouTube.
I'm astonished. I was guessing that that had never happened because why on earth would you?
Because it's got the same name and that's all anyone cares about. It's not like you can remember the rest of the lyrics. All you can remember is the night nurse.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what else the song goes on to say.
Well, I stand corrected. Happy to.
This is Gilby in London. Helen and Ollie and Smith. How come I've got like a PhD in all kinds of shit and I know all kinds of random things and yet I always lose pub quizzes?
So he's an academic, but he's bad at pub quizzes.
I've known quite a lot of stupid people with PhDs. I'm not talking about Martin, obviously. But it is possible that you know a lot about one thing.
Yes.
A lot of random shit about one thing.
It's also equally possible that you could be an absolute genius and fail at pub quizzes because they deliberately target the quiz at the demography that is attending the local public house, and that is a wide range of intellect.
Yeah. Can one person possibly be good at the 70s TV themes round?
Exactly.
And the Spice Girls round?
Yeah, well, this is it. So I went to a pub quiz a couple of months ago, and I actually deliberately constructed a team that I was pretty pleased with, because I was covering the entertainment and also sort of news and politics.
Yeah.
But then also on my team, I had someone who was interested in sport.
Yes, that's the valuable component.
It's a real black
playing
spot for me. Yeah. And then I had someone else who was kind of into, like, geography and sort of the world. So I thought between us, like, they can ask us who played football on the Nile on a question of sport and I'd know it. And we were doing really, really well. And I think we were possibly leading.
But
then they had a draw a cock round.
That's not a quiz. That's a hen do.
Yeah, exactly.
And how did you fail? Do you not know what a cock looks like?
Well, our cock wasn't as good as everyone else's cock. Oh. And it didn't have as many like desperate lewd jokes written on it. It was just a sort of fairly workaday image of a cock.
What did they want from the cock drawing? Did they want a very anatomical cock or did they want the most classic bus stop cock with like three pubes and jizz?
I think...
Three pubes per ball.
Had they wanted the latter, I still would have failed. But from recollection, the ones that actually sailed through, I mean, I don't remember it in detail because obviously I took to the liquor as soon as I realised we weren't winning. But the one that sailed through and got two rounds worth of points, by the way, just for drawing a cock.
That's appalling.
Equivalent to like 12 general knowledge questions, which we'd aced.
That is not a good quiz.
Not a good quiz. Was, I think someone had done like a satirical joke, like maybe they'd done one that looked like Farage.
Ugh.
You know, and I couldn't draw Nigel Farage.
That's fine. No one asked you to draw Nigel Farage.
Exactly. I was fuming.
You should be fuming. What was the prize?
Oh, about tenner.
I thought you were going to say like a giant inflatable cock.
Yeah, but it's for its own sake, isn't it? You know, you enter a pub quiz because you want to win.
And you only want to do things that you get disproportionately praised for, don't you?
And also, it's the fact that even if you turn up with a really solid quiz team, other people have done the stuff around it. Like, they've thought about their name.
Yes.
So, you know, someone turns up, what's your name? And I always think, oh, fuck, what's the name? I don't know. We've all got glasses. We're the four blokes with glasses. It's crap. And then someone else will be, what's your name? We're Quiz Tina Aguilera.
That you're like, always comes up, doesn't it?
Oh, but it's so
Quiz
good.
Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah.
I think also, though, Gilby, it's reasonable just to accept that clever people are not necessarily clever at everything. For instance, I love words and language stuff, and yet I'm bad at Scrabble and the words rounds on Countdown. Yeah. I'm good at the maths round on Countdown. It's like Martin is a documentedly intelligent man, and yet he is very bad at seeing things right in front of his face and not falling over things. So we've all got our weak spots, Gilby, and maybe yours is...
I don't think those are good definitions of intelligence.
Here is a question from Rebecca from London, who says... A while ago, I came out of a building at university and someone tried to hand me a leaflet which said Jews for Jesus on it. I said no because I didn't want one. But then as I walked away, I thought, isn't the really essential difference between Jews and Christians that Jews aren't really for Jesus?
Well, it's one of the crucial differences, I grant you, yeah.
Well, he answered me this. What is Jews for Jesus?
Jews for Jesus is an evangelical group of Christians, but it is specifically aimed at people who are born into Jewish families.
Okay.
And saying, look, you can maintain your Jewish identity, you can still be a Jew.
So you can be an ethnic Jew.
You can be an ethnic Jew who does Passover and believes in the Old Testament and has a bar mitzvah, but you also think that Jesus was the Messiah and
you
all the rest
have
of your
Christmas, don't you?
You will have Christmas. And all of your relatives are wrong when they say that you have to be one or the other.
And they say you can't have it all in this life.
That's it. You can absolutely have it all. You can believe that you are part of the chosen people, but also that God chose to have a son in a virgin and then kill him and then raise him again and then establish a British headquarters on the A41.
Why not?
Of it is possible.
Why not worship that absolute pervert?
But if you ever wanted to go and live in Israel, then you can't be a Jew for Jesus.
Oh.
Because there was a test case. I guess, in fairness, Israel realised that if Jews for Jesus really took off, then...
They'd be full of Christians.
They'd be giving right to a passport to a lot of people that would then come to their country and from the inside destroy Judaism. So it's kind of contrary to the spirit of the state of Israel in the first place.
That's slightly paranoid, but I see the book.
Here's a question from Rob in Sidmouth in Devon, who says, toilet paper brands often attempt to convince us that they are, in some sense... luxurious.
Yeah, there's not much marketing potential in telling people that your toilet paper is poor.
Austere, scratchy, unabsorbent.
What do they market Jay's Hygiene as, though? Because it is basically tracing paper, that stuff, isn't it?
For people who like the misery of a 1940s boarding school.
Yeah.
He says, Ollie, answer me this. What is the most expensive toilet paper in the world? Is there a genuinely luxury brand of toilet paper, i.e. one that all the top knobs use? If so, what is it? How much does it cost? And does it claim any high-profile endorsements?
There are two answers to that question, because there is the answer to the question, what is the most expensive toilet roll, which is technically available but is obviously a big press stunt and no one really buys.
Harrods must have some that's 200 quid and made out of mink,
well,
right?
Well, probably. I'll give you the answer in a minute, but it's so absurd that obviously it's not the real answer. Then there's the real answer, which is there a brand that is expensive but still, you know, you can imagine someone famous buying? First of all, the one that was clearly just a press stunt is there is an Australian Canadian sort of toilet paper delivery business called Toilet Paper Man. I can't believe I'm even doing their business right now and publicising them.
That's such a drab name. If you're going to be shilling very expensive toilet paper, you can't do it under that business name.
Well, exactly. They're not shilling expensive toilet paper. Right. They are shilling toilet paper. That is what they do. As a press stunt a few years ago, they decided to start selling toilet paper that was made from 22 carat gold.
Oh, that's like the Victoria's Secret $1 million diamond bra.
It's bullshit, isn't it? Mm. I mean, like, clearly no one would buy it. It costs £825,000.
It's not even practical.
It's made from solid gold. That wouldn't be at all absorbent.
It's King Midas's toilet paper.
Apparently, it does provide a gentle wipe for the utmost comfort.
You wouldn't be able to flush gold away, though.
But anyway, the real answer, as far as I can tell, that is actually sort of mass-produced and appears to be bought by celebrities, for example, the Emperor of Japan...
Celebrity. He's actually got a job.
Is a Japanese brand. It's kind of obvious when you think about it, because everything to do with toilets ultimately leads you to Japan, doesn't it, at some point. It is called Hanabisho. Mm-hmm. It is £32. I mean, it's 5,000 yen, which translates to about £32, mm-hmm. For a pack of three, which means each roll costs about 11 quid. So that is considerably more expensive than your average roll of Andrex, but it's nonetheless a mass-produced brand that people do buy if they've got too much money.
And what's so great about it?
It is made from the finest wood fibre pulp from Canada and treated with water from the Niodo River, which was ranked the cleanest in all of Japan.
Hmm, that seems a bit wasteful.
Yes, I think it probably is. But if you're the Emperor of Japan... You've
Nothing
got that kind of money
bum.
To burn. Exactly.
Yeah, but then I'm surprised they're not making it out of finest bamboo threads, because bamboo makes some very soft textiles.
Not just that. Each roll is signed by the maker to ensure quality.
That doesn't ensure quality at all.
Well, no, it doesn't really, does it? I suppose it's like a trademark stamp, but a real one, you know.
Also, with sure they've checked it, doesn't it?
Yeah, but the ink would get absorbed by the toilet paper.
I think it shows an artisan skill has gone into making it, doesn't it? And it's packaged very beautifully. According to the website of the toilet paper, it feels as if your skin is being gently swathed in silk.
I think, though, that the black toilet paper that we talked about a few months ago, because Russell Brand and Simon Cowell allegedly have it, I think that was about 50 quid a roll.
Huh.
That's probably just because you can't mass sell black toilet paper because it's stupid. I think if you really wanted super expensive toilet paper, why don't you just wipe your ass on banknotes?
Shut up and answer me this. Come on in. Why don't you shut your ugly face? I'm not ugly, it's the condition. It's no condition, it's the ugliness, mate.
Answer me this. Podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this. Podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this. Podcast at googlemail.com.
Nothing. Seriously, though, go back to your own country. That's what we're all thinking, isn't it? It's what we're all thinking. Who's got a question? I ain't got no questions. Don't look at me. Shut your mouth.
Time for a question from S, age 24 and a half.
That's a identity concealing S, isn't it? Not
it
an
is.
Actual name.
Not, well, I guess. And S, age 24 and a half, says, I'd love to work in Antarctica.
Okay.
Why? But I'm not a citizen of a country with a research program.
Oh, dear.
And I don't even have a science-related university degree.
Not planned for this at all, have you? Born in the wrong place, studying the wrong thing?
So, Helen, answer me this. Is this an impossible dream? I'm willing to clean things and wash dishes, and I'm not afraid of cold weather.
Sure. You are aware, though, S, that its midsummer high is around 0 degrees centigrade, not even counting for wind chill.
Yeah.
So I think that cold weather might get a bit wearing. And also the 6 months of darkness. You have to be in very good health to get a job in Antarctica, both physically and psychologically, because they don't have very comprehensive facilities. So they psychologically test you beforehand to see if you can cope with all the dark.
There are two exclamation marks on the email. I'm not afraid of cold weather, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. So actually,
yeah, well,
yes,
let's test that. Why don't you go and live in an industrial freezer for 4 months?
It does imply to me that they're saying they're aware that that is downplaying the situation and that this is the coldest, driest continent on Earth. I mean, I can't imagine why you would want to go and work there unless you were really interested in the scientific research. But maybe they are actually interested in the research. They just don't have the degree.
They might just be really into the film The Thing.
Or the film Happy Feet. Or the X-Files movie.
I don't think any of these are realistic depictions of what it's like there.
You don't know.
I don't know.
You've not been.
That's right. That is right.
And I wonder as well whether S has dismissed the idea of going as a tourist. For whatever reason.
Can you go as a tourist?
They're worried that Antarctica's climate is going to be very much adversely affected by the amount of tourism.
What, it will start warming up too much as people take flash photography?
The snow will get discoloured from all the footprints. And it's very hard to get rubbish, for instance, off Antarctica. So for every person, you have to factor that in.
So the answer is yes, you can go as a tourist, but yeah. It's really difficult for you.
It's expensive as well, because yeah. You can only go at certain times of year and you can only approach them certain ways.
It's kind of exciting, though. It is the closest thing to like going to the moon without leaving the Earth.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's so remote and inhospitable. Yeah.
If the moon had penguins on it.
Mm. Nothing about it appeals to me. And the coldest place I've ever worked is Edinburgh. And I've had enough of that after a month. I was even thinking, you know, because James Corden's in the news, you know, starting his big US chat show.
Yeah.
You know, he's moved all the way to, I guess it's New York, is it, to make that?
Or LA.
For his dream job. You know, and I was thinking, well, would I... You know, not. I'm saying this is a very realistic scenario.
Would you move to Antarctica to be Antarctica's favourite late night talk show host?
Yeah, precisely that. And I don't think I would actually leave the UK for any job that was long term. I think if it was for a few months, it'd be great.
What about if it's in a sunny place? Then
no, I think even if it was California, I think I'd. Mm. Yeah, no, I don't think I would because of family and friends and stuff here.
Well, S is not bothered about family and friends.
But to go and get what sounds like a minimum wage job, and I doubt they even have minimum wage in Antarctica since they don't really have a government. But to go and.
Yeah, who does govern Antarctica?
Antarctica's governed by like four different countries, lay claim to bits of it, and no one cares because no one fucking lives there apart from the penguins.
You get kicked to death by a penguin if you're naughty.
But actually, interesting thing, in 2012 for the Diamond Jubilee, the Queen was given a bit of Antarctica that previously had not been laid claim to by any particular nation. So there is now an area of Antarctica called Queen Elizabeth Land.
Has it got any rides?
I would love if it did. The Prince Philip is just a massive hole in the ground.
It's got to be one of these ones that is really, really inaccessible if it hadn't been claimed.
It's meaningless to her, isn't it? She's got so much free shit.
She's the Queen!
Also, giving someone that for effectively their birthday, I know it's the Jubilee, but really it's kind of like
her work birthday.
Her work birthday. I mean, that is like when someone gives you a certificate saying you own a bit of the moon, isn't it? It is meaningless. Yeah. If she went there to try and lay claim to Queen Elizabeth Land, she'd be like the old man in Nebraska.
But then maybe she'll be like Dr. Evil or whatever he's called at the end of the film version of Watchmen, and she goes and builds her castle of evil down there and goes to plot dooms.
Well, it's an option, isn't it?
I think she's been waiting for it.
She did a very fine job restoring the fire damage wing of Windsor Castle.
Yeah, time for a doom castle.
She's no stranger to a new build.
Can I make a more practical suggestion to help us?
Okay.
If you insist.
I think there's a big enough scientific institution there that by now they must have an artist in residence programme. So all you need to do is set yourself up as a poet or a painter or whatever and, you know, make something vaguely plausible.
That's a good idea, actually. It's like all these people pretending to care about science and they get money from the Wellcome Collection. Yeah.
There are arts and media opportunities, but they are quite sporadic. It seems a lot of them, they'll go for a year and then shut down. And I don't think most of them actually pay you, so they'll get you there.
Well,
but there's not much to spend your money on when you're there.
They can't not feed you.
Anyway, the National Science Foundation, which is US-based, has an artists and writers programme, and the deadline for applications is the 1st of May this year for arts and journalism and photography and history projects. So hurry up. But I think they're super, super competitive because even the jobs, even the most lowly jobs, because you don't have to do a science job there. You can do a support worker's job there, which is like cooking or waste disposal or IT or carpentry. Even those are extremely difficult to get. And I read this quite sad blog by a guy who'd spent 4 years pretty much devoting his life to getting one of these jobs, and he'd applied for dozens. If you're not from a country where there is a programme, it is very difficult. It's very competitive, even if you are from one of the countries that has a programme. There are a few jobs you can get at the Living Museum at Port Loughrea on Goodyear Island, which is off a peninsula. So how remote is that? That is a tiny island off Antarctica.
Yeah. So it's pretty much going to fit the bill for S, I say.
And it helps if you speak several languages and have special skills in computing and carpentry and stuff, or electrical engineering. And apparently every time there's a film or documentary about Antarctica on the telly, applications increase tenfold.
People are weird, aren't they? People are so weird. You know, I don't care.
Get away from it all, Ollie. Yeah. Live a simpler life that is more complicated due to the difficulty of not dying.
For whatever reason, whether you believe in God or whether you believe we've evolved purely, you know, in Darwinistic terms, our bodies are telling us not to live there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a very clear signal when a place is inhospitable that it should probably remain inhospitable.
Yeah, but look how well Dubai's been doing.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to live there either.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want to live there either. And there's less Barry Manilow in Antarctica.
There is that for it.
Well, let's head to the other side of the globe now for today's intermission, which is from Answer Me This, episode 134. Available now, along with all of our other classic episodes and albums, at answermethisstore.com. Why do Fox's Glacier Mints have a picture of a polar bear rather than a fox? It seems that the fox would make much more sense.
Well, no, the fox... I know what they mean, right? But the point is, Foxes clearly was someone's name who established the company. And people who happen to have the same name as an animal and then set up a company after their name obviously have quite a highfalutin impression of themselves. They're not going to want to represent their name, their history, their heritage, their ancestry with a little funny cartoon animal of a fox. Whereas obviously Glacier Mints, polar bear, lives on a glacier.
I heard something really mental about this, right? The polar bear is called Pepe and was introduced in 1922, and foxes actually shot and had taxidermied some polar bears, which they sent on tour around Britain until the 60s, when the people in the 60s were like, hang on, this seems like very wrong thing to do for advertising.
I'm never grateful to have a fox's glacier.
You can make a lovely igloo out of them. Listeners, please do call in with your questions. You can dial the following number. 02081235877. Or you can Skype Answer Me This. Let's hear who's been in touch.
Hello, my name's Adam. I'm calling from southeast London. Helen and Ollie, answer me this. I work for the ambulance service answering 999 calls and work very long 12-hour shifts, sometimes doing some very difficult and depressing work, as I'm sure you can understand. I've taken to trying to clear my head and cheer myself up on my breaks by walking around outside. The issue is our call centre is in the darkest Waterloo, and the area around the call centre is not particularly nice. Now, considering I work both daytimes and nighttimes, this sometimes means that I'm walking around at 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, trying to get some fresh air and cheer myself up. So the question I'm asking is, Helen and Ollie and Martin the Soundman, how do I get some fresh air and cheer myself up during a night shift without looking like I'm either looking to buy drugs or some sort of mentalist?
I was wondering whether you might look less suspicious walking around in the night if you had a high-vis jacket on and you look like you're working on the roads or something, because you see a lot of people doing that at night. But in the day, if you were worried about why you were walking around these not very walking-friendly areas, you would just pretend to be jogging or something. But at night, jogging at night still seems weird. So I reckon put on the appearance of a night worker.
Yeah, except if this was an episode of Mr. Bean, you'd then get roped into digging a manhole, obviously.
That is an occupational hazard, but it might cheer Adam up amidst these very long shifts of misery.
Adam, who exactly are you worried about seeing you and judging you?
The perfectly above board people that are around at one in the morning.
Exactly. If you get the sense as you walk around that most people around there are drug addicts and or mentalists, as you say, then why are you worried about what junkies and people with mental health problems are going to think about you? If it's other people like you who are innocently working, they're going to be thinking the same thing about themselves. You might even be able to share a nod of recognition with the only other person on the street who is sober.
Most areas of London, you are used to seeing people around at all hours of
especially
the day.
An international, well, what was an international terminal like Waterloo?
That's true. You could go for a walk through the train terminus. That's not a bad idea.
But I assume that Adam is in a part of Waterloo that means it's not very easy for him to go on a walk, say, along the riverbank.
You're always close to the riverbank if you're in Waterloo, though.
Yeah, but he could be right at the Elephant and Castle End, which would also chime in with him being near some estates
depressed.
He's not particularly enjoying.
Feeling he's made some bad life choices. Yeah. Well, I think generally speaking, if you've got cans on, if you're listening to something like this, for example...
You mean big headphones?
I mean big
cans,
headphones, yeah. And I'm
talking twat headphones. We talked about.
I'm talking full on, you know, George Michael when doing a charity single for Stock Aitken and Waterman type headphones. If you're wearing those and walking briskly, people will know that you mean business, i.e., you are not to be meddled with, i.e., you are not looking for drugs. They'll understand that you're a young professional, merely moving from one place to the other in your own time, and you don't want to engage with anyone else. That's my tip for walking around in London at night.
Or you could get a dog and be walking the dog.
The problem is you've got to keep the dog in the office then.
Well, maybe that would cheer him up, though.
It would cheer everyone up in an ambulance centre, wouldn't
it? Yeah. I realise that it is a big life commitment to have a dog. And also you'd be keeping a dog on very unpredictable hours.
Yeah. A dog is for life, not just to let mentalists near your workplace think that you're not mental.
You could get a toy dog on wheels, but then that might not help with the people thinking you're mental notion.
I like what you were saying about the high-vis jacket, though. I wonder if there's a compromise that looks like work gear. I mean, actually, you're probably not wearing a suit because you're in a call centre. You're probably just wearing a T-shirt.
Could you get some ambulance related merch.
Yeah, NHS polo shirt.
I'm not saying pose as a paramedic, but you can get official looking garb.
But I was going to say just a suit, actually. If you're wearing a suit, that means I'm at work,
no,
doesn't it?
No, that's so weird, though. Wearing a suit at 3 a.m. yeah. Looked like, no, I'm at work, perfectly normal. Here's my bowler hat, good day.
I think just making yourself visible is a big part of it, isn't it? Like, if you're sort of wearing dark clothes, and especially if you're a woman that sees, like, a figure kind of come out of the shadows, that's more... Look, just knowing that someone... You can see someone from 50 metres away. Oh, they're probably just going
to walk. Yeah, but you see how the headphones would help now in that scenario. If they're listening to the headphones, they're not preying on you. I mean, they might be, but, you know, you'd be thinking, oh, well, they've got another priority here, and that's the reach the end of this fascinating song. Or what's the one thing that more clearly than anything spells out lunch break? Lunchbox.
Yes.
Transformers lunchbox.
Yeah.
No one's going to beat you up with one of those.
They might, because it's got hard corners. I've got an idea there, Adam. Dress as a ghost. Go on. Why not play this to the hilt?
It's like a double bluff, isn't it, then?
Absolutely. Here is a question from Drew from Knoxville, Tennessee, who says, I was watching the BBC series of House of Cards.
That's amazing, isn't it? That is something that Netflix has brought the world, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine just 2 years ago, a man from Knoxville writing to us saying, I've just been watching the classic 1980s BBC political drama House of Cards.
And it's grainy.
And that just wouldn't happen.
Starring Ian Richardson as Francis Urquhart, who, spoiler alert, becomes Prime Minister, and in scenes set in the House of Commons during Prime Minister's question time, I noticed that he steps up to a microphone set on a table.
You are very observant, Drew.
Upon which seems to be a set of old leather-bound books with some certain ceremonial placement and purpose, as though these very books were foundational to the representative government.
As if some books left at the heart of Parliament couldn't be there by pure coincidence.
Or they couldn't be hiding a video cassette in a mock leather sleeve. Ollie, answer me this. Are these books some gravely important constitutional documents, or maybe something else like the Magna Carta, the Rules of Order, Parliamentary Minutes, Accounts Ledgers, Samuel Pepys' Super Secret Diaries, Autograph Books, Masonic Arcanery, Pastry Recipes?
None of those.
Are they books with many pictures? I bet there are no pictures.
There are no pictures.
He's thought about this so much. I really admire that.
He's left out the really obvious solution for what they are, though.
Are they the Harry Potter books with the adult bindings rather than childish bindings?
Obviously, that's what they
are.
All
seven.
Most important contributing factor to British tourism over the past decade. So, of course, that would be honoured in Parliament.
Is it the Concise Oxford Dictionary?
No. Are you actually pulling my dick, or do neither of you guess?
No, I don't know.
Can't guess what could be the most important book.
Photo albums.
The Bible.
Yes, thank you.
It's the Bible?
Of course it's the Bible, yes.
Why? Dictionary's better!
So when you go to the House of Commons and you become an MP, you swear in. Every MP after the election will swear in.
Well, you just choose a swear word.
Just
choose
a swear word. Set up, you stand up in the House of Commons and you swear in allegiance to Her Majesty the Queen on God. And you do that over the book of your choice. If you're not religious, you can have a solemn affirmation, which does not include an oath. But there is no option to be not a monarchist, because you are serving.
Can you really be a monarchist if you're religious? Because the whole thing's ridiculous if you don't believe in the divine right of kings.
But anyway, the point is the books that you're swearing on are the books in the middle. So there is a copy of the Bible, there is a copy of the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Quran, etc. And actually, if you think about modern day Parliament buildings, because obviously ours is...
Not that modern.
Quite old.
Yeah. I'd imagine it's not that accessible for people with limited mobility, and I bet they don't have enough loos.
Indeed. But if you think about Australia, for example, if you've ever seen the Australian Parliament on TV, it's a much more modern building as you'd expect. Actually, weirdly, our dispatch box, the thing that the Prime Minister is leaning on in the House of Commons, is a gift from Australia.
What's in it?
I'm not sure what's in it. I think possibly more books, actually.
It's probably just Lamingtons.
The Australian Parliament, they too, even though it's a modern building and they have a sort of IKEA-looking desk in the middle of it, they too have loads of modern copies of the Bible in the middle. That is the tradition. So that's what you're doing. Yeah, you're debating over the Bible. Quite cool, though. One of the books is a burnt copy of the Bible that was the victim of the bomb in the House of Commons in the 1940s.
Heaven's
and has
above.
Been restored. But it still looks like a book.
The House of Commons in the 1940s?
Hitler.
Was it Hitler?
Yeah. Yep. He was a big guy at the time.
He was really
dominating the bombing scene in London in the 1940s.
A bomb hit the House of Commons, not a bomb was brought into the House
of Commons.
He didn't
walk in with a rucksack.
Right,
Hitler shoe bombed the House of Commons.
I've made my fortune on the dark web selling machine guns, but my dream is to monetize my homemade cream buns. They don't sit too well listed next to AK-47s. My poor lonely buns.
Build your bun shop of dreams using squarespace.com. There's 24/7 support if you get it wrong, and you'll be selling more buns than guns before very long if you evade the law.
I've just been arrested.
Thanks very, very much to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of Answer Me This.
Yes, thank you for everything you do for all podcasts around the world, but particularly this one.
But also, we appreciate what Squarespace offer in terms of lovely website design.
I think the audience would appreciate it too, Helen.
I think they would. I've been using it. It's very spiffy and it's very easy.
Yes, it's basically like web design, but with magic dust.
It's like web design for people who don't know how to do web design.
Yeah, exactly.
That is me.
Yeah,
and me too.
And that could be you, listeners. And if you want to have a go, then you can try the two-week free trial at squarespace.com. And then if you like it, sign up. Get 10% off for a year using the code
ANSWER.
Here's a question from Tim in Bordeaux. That's in France. Everyone.
I knew that,
Yeah, but
Tim.
You know, some of the listeners might not.
It's nice, though.
He says, Helen, answer me this. At what stage in the no doubt rich and complex history of ice cream did vanilla become the default flavour? Surely plain ice cream would just taste of cream, much like plain yoghurt tastes of yoghurt.
Mm.
And yet the ground zero ice cream tends to be vanilla flavoured.
Doesn't it, though?
Your thoughts on this would be most appreciated.
Do you taste... I mean, do you, Ollie,
yes, me,
Van,
yeah,
and you, Helen Zaltzman, do you taste vanilla in, yes, vanilla ice cream? Because I, yes, very rarely do.
Depends
very
on the ice cream. If it's like Mr. Whippy, then you don't.
That's true.
Like, if you're having Haagen-Dazs, you probably do, don't you?
So when people say the words vanilla ice cream, what comes to mind is a yellow scooped ball of, like, Cornish full cream ice cream.
Yeah. It looks like mashed potato.
A little, I guess. And I'm imagining it tasting delicious because I like vanilla ice cream. I know you're not a massive
fan. I'm imagining it tasting like a waste of time.
I like the taste of vanilla ice cream, but I don't know what vanilla tastes like. To me, it just tastes like creamy sugar, which is very, very nice.
But when it comes to, say, Wall's ice cream, like Cornetto, that is sugar and cream, isn't it? It's not vanilla that I'm tasting. Right, Martin, you're smelling vanilla essence now. Can you see the resemblance?
Ring any bells?
I just can't really place it.
It's really strong. I don't know how you don't
That's
get
why
it.
I don't like it. Because it has a taste and smell identity. No, I hate the smell of it as well.
Smell on my nose.
But actually, Tim's saying, imagine if it was just the standard flavour was just cream. That would taste of nothing.
Well, it would taste of sugar.
Yeah.
More.
I prefer vanilla to that.
It's still what most vanilla ice cream dominantly tastes of, sugar.
If you go to Italy and have those ice creams that are like, what, a fiore di latte or cream or something, they don't taste any different from vanilla ice cream to me.
Maybe you're vanilla blind.
Yeah, maybe I am.
Anyway, how did vanilla come to be the dominant flavour of not particularly a strong flavour?
Well, I'm going to point the finger of vanilla blame at Thomas Jefferson, because vanilla was a popular ice cream flavouring in France. I think people had been using it for a while to flavour things like hot chocolate. It's a not very old flavouring. Jefferson went to France and was so enraptured by the French vanilla ice cream that he brought the recipe back to America, and in the Library of Congress is a handwritten recipe by Thomas Jefferson for vanilla ice cream.
Wow. Mm. Maybe that's what's inside the dispatch box.
Yeah, it's actually a cooler. So I wonder whether it was just like, oh, do as Thomas Jefferson does, or whether it was like vanilla ice cream was probably a kind of status symbol for a long time, because vanilla was very expensive.
Did you have to import it to the States?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cream and sugar and eggs were expensive luxury goods. So put them all together. And also by putting the vanilla into that mixture, you are extending the vanilla, because a little vanilla can go a long way when you put it in ice cream.
Mm.
So maybe it was a status symbol, and then its ubiquity made it into something very humdrum.
Here's another question of food from Anya and Jonas from Devon, who say, today we were in Sainsbury's walking down the dairy aisle, and we noticed that one of the sections was labelled yoghurt.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Mm. The temerity of the place.
Yeah, I'm maybe not doing justice to this revelation by the way I'm reading it out, because this is a question of spelling. The way they've spelt it, as it was spelt in the Sainsbury's, is Y-O-G-U-R-T. Okay?
Okay. Mm. Yoghurt. Okay.
Yes. Yoghurt. We were confused and a little outraged, as we both had been taught in primary school and throughout our lives.
Age 25, you had a booster about how to spell yoghurt.
To spell it as yoghurt, Y-O-G-H-U-R-T. After some research, we found that yoghurt can be spelled as yoghurt, yoghurt, as you saw it in Sainsbury's, and also yoghurt, Y-O-G-H-O-U-R-T.
That's a real outlier.
So we've got yoghurt with an H in, without an H in, and with an H and an O in it.
Putting the ho in yoghurt.
Helen, answer me this. Which spelling of yoghurt is correct?
Spell check has only underlined Yog Howart, but it's left the other two alone.
So the other two are in popular parlance, but which is correct, Helen?
You understand that it's all yogurt, right? Does it matter?
Where's the word from? Is it French?
It's Turkish.
Turkish.
So it entered the English language in the 1620s, and I think in Turkish it was spelt with just the G with a little accent over it, but that meant it was a soft G, so like yogurt or something. I don't speak Turkish, I'm terribly sorry.
I know the soft thing you're talking about. Yeah. You see that on other Turkish food stuff.
Yogurt.
Yeah, okay. And so it's a transliteration, basically.
So yeah, I think they put the H in because of that, but the G is more similar to the Turkish spelling.
And yet, there aren't similar, as far as I can see, transliteration discrepancies with Japanese foodstuffs. Like sushi is always S-U-S-H-I, and that's transliterated from a completely different alphabet. Why with Turkish would there be this issue?
I think with some languages, there are sounds that translate easily into the Roman alphabet and in some that aren't.
Okay, I suppose that's fair.
But I suppose the G-H is quite a flexible phoneme in English anyway, because it can be in cough or through.
Or gherkin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's a real messy phoneme.
Phoneme's gone wild.
But the extra vowel, I don't know. I'd say the extra vowel is non-canonical, the yoghurt.
Mm. And yet, does that mean it's incorrect? Because if it's still aiming for the same thing, it's aiming to appropriate a pronunciation. Does that mean it's wrong?
I just think if you're taking words from another language, then
it's legitimate.
It's just very difficult to decide on the correct way when the language is not that similar to the language you're bringing them into.
And therefore, permissible to have like 10 different spellings of hummus?
That does same seem to reason. Be the way, yeah. Isn't it? Hummus?
Yeah. Yeah.
Both hummus and yogurt, I would probably go for the shortest one.
That's
so I wouldn't
remix,
go for the hummus, because that's adding letters. So I'd just go for the
But what about when
letters.
My dad calls it hummus? Like, is that just wrong?
I'm not going to tell him he's wrong. He's lived longer than I have. Maybe he's seen more hummus than I have.
Isn't there one kind of hummus that has the same spelling as the kind of hummus which means organic matter in soil?
It's just complicated, isn't it, when you bring in these fancy immigrant foodstuffs trying to change our language.
Middle Eastern foods come over here and try and invade our mouths.
In your case, they've succeeded.
They have strongly succeeded. Without yoghurt or hummus, I would be half the man, literally, that I am now.
I wonder, though, whether Sainsbury's has to have meetings where they decide on the official Sainsbury's spelling of yogurt. Like the Guardian style guide decides that they're going to spell bellend as two words, whereas I think it's the Sunday People that has it one word and other people hyphenate it. But they actually have to decide these things.
Yeah, well, you've got to be consistent.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it gives me satisfaction that someone has had to decide
that it's someone's job,
that it's yogurt in Sainsbury's.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And yet some of those pots of yogurt in the yogurt aisle will say yogurt differently, won't they? And that is probably going to cause these people a lot of bother,
I suppose. When you're Sainsbury's, you're deciding, as our questioners point out, not just what is on your own brand yogurt pot, but what is going above the aisle on the sign.
Yeah, don't want to have to change that sign once it's up.
I'm an Answer Me This fan. I listen with my nan. She is not so keen. She finds it too obscene. I follow them on Twitter, though Ashton Kutcher's fitter. I want to take things further, just one step short of murder. I want to look like Ollie Man. I want to smell like Ollie Man. I want to be like Ollie Man. I want to chase like Ollie Man. I want to look like Ollie Man. I want to talk like Ollie Man.
Here's a question from Holly, who is 28 and from Aberdeen. She says, I recently started online dating, and much to my surprise, the first date I went on was great, and I've been seeing the same guy on a semi-regular basis for the last 2 months.
Well, it sounds like you've got the perfect relationship. Thanks for that, Holly, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time here on Answer Me This.
No.
No?
More happens in this
what?
Email.
Oh, okay.
After going out for dinner together last week, I went back to his place to stay over for the first time. So off I went to bed with this tall, handsome, strapping man.
Uh-huh.
And things were going well until I reached down and felt, well, pretty much nothing.
Oh.
He has the smallest penis I have ever seen in my life.
How many have you seen? We need that raw data to be able to assess.
Can you arrange them so they look like a bar chart?
Are you a penis expert or are you just a fan?
I don't know what the average sample is for a 28-year-old sexually active woman who is heterosexual.
I'd say between half a dozen and a dozen probably is average.
Okay.
So let's say she's seen half a dozen before. Smallest she's ever seen in her life, that's only one or six.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I'm already speaking up for this guy. I feel sorry for him.
Don't feel sorry for him. He's tall, strapping and handsome.
Oh, okay.
Holly says, I've only ever heard rumours of them being this small. It's roughly the size of a highlighter pen.
Now, what kind of highlighter pen are we talking here?
presumably the minis like you've got, where you've got the set of four in
to be
a
clear,
tiny
we're talking
little
about highlighter pens, not penises here.
I don't know what your penis is. It's a highlighter penis, though, isn't it? Like, you're choosing different colours.
Mine is probably roughly the size of a full-size Tableau Boss. You're talking about the half-size.
Congratulations, yeah. Don't want to know.
I'm saying there's a big range of highlighters, right? But we she's talking about the ones that are smaller than the little finger, the traditional small penis size.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're a bit bigger than that, aren't they?
Are we talking penises or highlighter pens?
I don't know anymore.
The small Stabilo Boss highlighter pens
are really small.
About the size of the first two joints of my little finger.
But you're the only person I know, yeah. Ollie, who has possessed a small Stabilo Boss highlighter pen.
No, yeah. I've never seen those. I see the normal ones, and they're sort of like, they've got a kind of oblong cross-section. They're probably
about
long.
4 inches long, like the average male penis.
Yes, yes.
I think that's fairly respectable.
Yes, that's what I was saying.
Yeah. Well,
I'm happy enough.
Ollie wasn't. Ollie says, because I didn't want to embarrass him, I just carried on as if I was having a great time. An Oscar-worthy performance given the circumstances.
That's right, because no woman has ever pretended to have fun during sex before.
We have a nice time together, and he is a lovely guy, but I like having sex, and I just can't work with that. Ollie, answer me this. How do I end things with this guy without letting on that it's because the sex was rubbish? P.S. I know I sound like I'm being shallow and superficial, but it really is tiny.
Well, if you were shallow, I don't think it would be such an issue.
But it's two different issues, isn't it? Someone having a small penis and the sex being rubbish.
Absolutely. Although, let me just say right from the outset, like, she's internet dating. They've only been together for a bit. The whole purpose of internet dating is you do kind of get to choose what you want from the beginning.
So she's still shopping for a man.
Exactly. I know that it's not really the done thing on sort of romantic websites where straight people meet for love.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, you know, if she was able to specify drop-down menu, I want, you know, average to large penis.
She wants large board marker
exactly.
Minimum.
Yes. If she were able to say that, I think she would have done. So in fairness to her, I think now having discovered he has a very small penis, she is thinking, do I want to spend the rest of my life with him? If she really doesn't, it's better to get out now and be honest to herself about that. So I think there isn't anything...
But not be honest to him.
Never be honest to him.
That's because it's unfair.
Absolutely unfair. There's nothing he can do about it. You're just going to make him feel terrible.
Yeah, totally.
And as you point out, other women who aren't preoccupied with the size of penis would nonetheless be able to have a happy sex life with him with his small penis.
Well, maybe he's bad at sex.
Well, he could be both indeed, yeah.
Because people with small penises are able to be good at sex. And in fact, a lot of them really try to overcompensate using other parts of their bodies.
Oral techniques.
Yeah, manual.
Sex toys.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you are the person who is dating someone who has a very, very small penis, the thing to do is make them think like all of those things are their idea. Mm. Don't in any way suggest.
You are not satisfying
because
me,
you're not
try
satisfying
something
me,
else.
Yeah, get down there and munch my muff. Don't say that.
But maybe it's never been a problem with anyone else that
indeed.
You've been with.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just not sexually compatible, which is another issue. But, Holly, I would maybe dump him in a way that is quite ambiguous, because what might happen, see, he's the first guy you've met on internet dating, you're like, oh, everything's great except for his penis.
Yeah.
But after a few go-rounds, you might think, actually, he was a pretty good guy.
Yeah.
And if you've said, sorry, can't deal with your tiny knob, then that's...
Definitely
really
don't say that.
Bridge.
I think
no,
in
that.
Fairness to Holly, she has agreed that she's not going to say that. She's
not
asking,
good.
How do I let him down without telling him that's the reason? Bearing in mind that they obviously click in other ways and he is a nice guy.
Mm.
And that is tricky, isn't it?
Mm.
Because anything else that you might do to try and compensate sort of involves to some extent acknowledging that not everything is brilliant in the bedroom, and you don't want to go down that path even though ultimately you're going to dump him anyway.
Well, then how do you kindly dump somebody that you don't particularly know? So, well, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I'm ready for a relationship yet. I'm not sure you and I are that compatible, blah blah blah.
Yeah, those are the standard get-outs, and he's going to be hurt, but he's not going to think it's because of the size of my penis. I suppose you could, because you're internet dating, say, look, before we get too deep, don't say that. Before we go too far down this track, you should know that I was dating someone else when we started dating.
Well, unless she's made it too obvious that he was the first guy she met and therefore she hasn't met any others.
Yeah.
Depends what groundwork she's laid, if she's been too honest.
Yeah.
Do you need that excuse if you're breaking up with someone that you've only known or had a relationship with for a short time?
Yeah, presumably not. Couldn't you just say, I'm going to be really busy at work for the next few weeks?
Or could you just
weeks?
Say, I don't think, it was nice, we had a nice time, but I don't... see a future.
But obviously she was seeing a future until she saw his penis.
Well, then she wasn't seeing anything.
But that happens all the time. People sleep together and that puts them off one another.
Yeah.
Maybe you should wait for him to dump you. Like, sorry, I can't love a woman with a giant vagina.
There's a subplot in The Godfather about that.
What?
Yeah, not in the film. In the book, there's this subplot.
Very much not in the film.
It's the, you know, the, you know, the brother that gets killed.
He's got, but that's all of them.
He's got a really a huge penis, and he's and no other man can satisfy his wife. And then some doctor realizes that she's got a gigantic vagina, and she has surgery to have a smaller vagina. I'm not making this up.
No.
Okay.
I mean, you're using an obscure literary example, but it is worth making the point that just because you did not have a pleasurable experience on him, other women might do.
Or you might, Holly, if you would just be a bit more open-minded and maybe concentrate a bit more and try some different techniques before you give up on this guy if he's so great in every other way. And also, maybe he was nervous because it was your first time spending the night together, and maybe that affected his performance, and maybe he'll be better at sex maybe, once he's more comfortable
with
you.
Yeah, maybe if he was more relaxed, then he'd have a full 12 inches because he's got a very responsive penis.
No, but she was saying the sex was rubbish. Maybe he would put in a better performance at
She's
sex.
Very size-focused, Helen.
Maybe he was nervous because you whipped out a tape measure going, how can it really be? Anyway, listeners, if you've got advice for Holly, or if you just have a question.
I've got an average size penis, but the girl I'm with seems to think it's tiny. How do I dump her? Then send all of the questions that come into your head to us via our usual contact details, all of which are on our website.
AnswerMeThisPodcast.com.
When you're on there, you can also click the buttons to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And you can visit AnswerMeThisStore.com to get our albums and our old episodes and our apps.
Yes, all of that if you'd like to hand us money. If you just like to listen to more free stuff, you can listen to Helen's podcast, The Allusionist.
You certainly can. And you can listen to Ollie on the Media podcast. And both of those come out in the weeks where Answer Me This does not come out. So we've got you covered every week.
Every week there's some Helen and Ollie. It's on certain weeks do we talk about people's penises.
There's some occasional Martin Sandman as well.
Yeah?
Sure.
What's your website, Martin?
Oh, soundoftheladies.com for music. The Sound of the Ladies. Sound of the Ladies. And then there's The Global Lab and Brain Train and... Yeah, those are the podcasts, I think.
I should just fade out on him listing all of his podcasts, shouldn't I? Fade up again next week in real time.
And we must remember to thank Squarespace once again for their support.
From the bottom of our tiny highlighter pen-sized hearts.
Thank you, Squarespace.
And please return in 2 weeks' time for the next Answer Me This.
Bye!